This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
It's Freddie Prinz Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, everybody. It's the Fantasy Pros Dynasty Fantasy Football Podcast brought to you by Reality Sports Online. I'm your host, Scott Bogman. We have a good one for you today. I'm joined, of course, by Pat Fitzmaurice at Fitz underscore FF on the Twitter machine. Fitzy, how's the summer treating you, my friend?
Doing great, Boggs. I mean, does summer really start before training camps open? And now that they're fully open, man, the only thing is that, you know, that's great. But now every time I see a player name trending on Twitter, I'm terrified that they tore their ACL and have to immediately check just to confirm that that's not the case. So
or they're holding summer's... out or holding in or they had an appendectomy. Right. Man. Like it's been a bunch of them. So
yeah,
far.
You see that name. You see that name and you got to click it, man. You got to find out what's going on or what people are talking about. So
easy clicks are being had these days. And I am 50% of them. I know that. So just clicking on everything today, we're going to be talking about the top dynasty storylines for training camp and the preseason. And we have an awesome guest, Chase Vernon, the director of content at and media management at Trophy Smack, creator of Join Our Circle, lead bet analyst at Roto Underworld, and ranker for Dynasty Nerds, and of course, participating in the Scott Fish Bowl, as always here. Chase, welcome to the show. Thank you for coming on. Find him on Twitter at FF underscore intervention. I love that handle. That is amazing. How is your summer treating you, and are you ready for the season to start here?
I am so ready. I am absolutely ready for this summer to kick up, or for the season to kick off. And this summer has been nothing but a blast putting everything together over there with Trophy Smack, of course. Player Profiler and Roto Underworld have been absolutely insane as well. So yeah, man, it's all been coming together and really taking off. I'm excited.
I'm ready to talk about these interesting preseason storylines too. Before we get to that though, I got to tell you guys that we have a giveaway again this month for a Treylon Burks autographed jersey we're doing right now. All you need to do is subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/fantasypros. Take a screenshot, submit it to fantasypros.com/dynasty contest. That's fantasypros.com/dynasty contest. You are entered in to win. Do it as soon as possible because it ends at the end of the month and that is rapidly approaching. So get that in as soon as you can. And like I said, check out our YouTube, youtube.com/fantasypros. This podcast is also available over there on our YouTube with all of our other podcasts, quick hitting videos, live streams, everything from Fantasy Pros. Please subscribe if you like our content because it really helps us out, and click the bell to get notified of our latest content so you don't miss any of our stuff and things and podcasts. That would be awesome. So Chase, let's start with you. What interests you in terms of dynasty when you look at this offseason? You look going into training camp, what are the storylines that really grab your eye and you are excited to watch?
I mean, I'm excited about a lot of these different storylines. Like, y'all asked me to pick three, and I'm like, are you kidding me? I have to pick three that I have to talk about? Like,
we got to keep it in an hour. I would love to do a four-hour podcast and go over everyone. That probably wouldn't even be long enough. So, but we got to narrow it down. So,
honestly, I'm going to go with probably the best trade of the offseason for all the parties involved. And that's going to be the Marquise Brown trade over there to Arizona from the Baltimore Ravens. And I want to talk about Arizona in particular. You know, we have Arizona who let Christian Kirk walk in free agency. They let Chase Edmonds walk in free agency. And now they kind of have a dynamic without DeAndre Hopkins as to where, what type of offense are they going to run? You know, are we going to see Rondale Moore kind of take the Christian Kirk role, play out of the slot, stretch the field? Is Marquise Brown just going to be the primary target over the first 6 weeks of the season, maybe even 8-10 weeks of the season, where he's going to see, I don't know, maybe 100 targets in that span because that's how much they want to utilize him and that's what they paid him to do? You know, what are we going to see when it comes to Chase Edmonds and who's going to take that pass catching role out of the backfield? And when we have Kyler Murray, right, who was college teammates with Marquise Brown, they were hitting on all cylinders back in college. And then you saw Marquise Brown, who was a tremendous deep threat receiver, although he did deal with a few drops. If he was getting behind the defenders, which was almost every single snap that Lamar Jackson had time to throw, and Lamar Jackson was able to deliver an accurate pass, Marquise Brown was making play after play after play. So now they have Kyler Murray, who was actually one of the most accurate deep ball passers in the NFL. I believe for passes 20 yards or more, he actually had the most accurate downfield passes. And he only played 13 games, which is the craziest part about that. In 13 games, he ended up having that level of success throwing deep downfield. Marquise Brown could be an absolute steal. But what if they want to use Marquise Brown close to the line of scrimmage? What if they want to get him the ball more often? Is this an opportunity for Rondale Moore to absolutely explode, you know, in terms of fantasy value and being able to absolutely crush it down there? When he's given the opportunity, he's succeeded. The only thing is he just hasn't seen that opportunity yet. And I would like to know what's going to happen with that.
I love this one. And because this feeds into, Pat versus myself in terms of Marquise Brown's value, but he also loves Rondale Moore. So when you look at dynasty ranks for this wide receiver core, in terms of ECR, 31 for Marquise Brown, 35 for DeAndre Hopkins. So even though this is a passing air raid system that should give us, you know, great pass catchers, you know, people are kind of questionable because Hopkins is suspended. That's why he's a wide receiver three. Missing six games is a huge chunk. Plus, he's getting a little bit lean in terms of age there. Fitzy, your thoughts on Marquise Brown? And is this one of your favorite storylines too? Just how good is this offense going to be? Who is going to step up in the absence of not just Hopkins, but also Christian Kirk is out the door. Chase Edmonds, like Chase mentioned. Is this one of your favorites here?
Yeah. So Chase makes some interesting points. Like, is Hollywood Brown going to be used in that vertical role? And we talked about this, Boggs, like, and I kind of comped him to DeSean Jackson, who's always been that vertical wide receiver. And I pointed out that DeSean Jackson was actually, you know, his yards per target number was crazy for his career, 9.9. And what Hollywood's is like 7.2 for his career so far. So but Chase makes the point, like, we have not seen, people are always belittling Cliff Kingsbury for his horizontal passing attack. And, maybe Chase makes a pretty good point that we might see Hollywood used a lot closer to the line of scrimmage than we are used to. And, maybe that means a different sort of usage for Rondale Moore. So, yeah, I definitely am intrigued to see what this looks like. And Chase didn't even bring this up, but I mean, like, the Cardinals, a team that you would think would have no use for tight ends, all of a sudden has two fascinating guys. One at the tail end of his career, you know, Zach Ertz, kind of no one is really trading for him in Dynasty unless they're loading up for 1 year. You know, this is my title window, get him now. But like, everyone is excited about McBride's future, I think. But is that future going to be here in Arizona in this offense, or, you know, is he going to just be kind of a square peg in a round hole for his first few years in the league?
I think if you're going to insult Cliff Kingsbury for anything, it should be his timeout usage. That's number one. Not the deep passing, but also, I mean, look, Marquise Brown, 91 catches last year, his first year over 90, but a big chunk of that was because the entire secondary got pummeled for Baltimore last year. They were letting up yards and yards and yards. They had to play point for point late in the game. The Ravens actually threw more passes last year than the Cardinals, which is just crazy to think of, but it's because they were losing so late in all of those games because the secondary was so bad and so beat up that they had to pass, not to mention the fact that all the running backs got hurt last year as well. So Chase, I'm excited about this. And you didn't even mention it. What are your thoughts on Trey McBride and his future?
So this becomes extremely interesting because they do like to run, you know, these three wide receiver sets. You know, Pat brought it up, how they want to get downfield. They want this vertical attack to really help. And Trey McBride can get downfield to an extent. He can be that seam type guy. But how many snaps is he really going to see? And for dynasty purposes, I'm all in. Like, Zach Ertz has, what, maybe two, three at the most valid years left. Now, he could end up playing spoiler to Trey McBride, but Trey McBride has the ability to kind of break that mold. So I'm excited for him. I think that we will see him flash this year, which will keep his value up, which is why I want to acquire him right now at his value, because I think it only goes up for here. We're talking about like the Irv Smith Jr. type of players who could have that full head of steam going into 2023. So I'm going to try and get him while I can right now. But in terms of like this year, I don't want to hold my hopes up too high, because as long as Zach Ertz is healthy, we're going to see Zach Ertz dominate the snaps for the most part.
Fitz, your first subject here, I like that you have this team in particular. So go ahead and lay it on us. What is your number one storyline that you're looking for in the preseason and training camp and all that good stuff?
So actually, number one for me, Boggs, like, there are a lot of fascinating teams. We're going to see, you know, the Lions on Hard Knocks, which should be kind of fun. A lot of other ones too, but I think number one for me, and this is not usually a team that prompts a lot of intrigue in training camp, J-E-T-S, Jets, 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 baby. I am just fascinated by this team. And, like, obviously it starts with Zach Wilson. Like, if he makes a major step, I think that's going to unlock a lot of value in this offense. And the offensive line isn't really an excuse anymore. Like, the Jets have made some nice investments there. I think this is, like, an above-average offensive line now. You know, and last year was rocky. But we kind of expected a rocky rookie year for Zach Wilson. I think if he's ready to make a tier jump, we're going to know it, I think, in training camp and the preseason. Like, the drumbeat is going to build for him, and we're going to see some, you know, hopefully some good preseason showings. If he's not, if he's kind of uneven in training camp again, you wonder if the Jets might have to go in another direction and sort of rethink the quarterback position. But man, I mean, the rest of it, like, it was easy to make Breece Hall the 101 in rookie drafts. I've got him like 106 at running back overall now. And like, if Wilson can make this offense go, I think, like, you know, he could just become this immensely valuable dynasty commodity. And then I've also got both Elijah Moore and Garrett Wilson as top 20 assets at receiver. So, a lot of potential dynasty value on this roster. They just need Zach Wilson to make it happen.
Yeah. Chase, like Fitzy says, I mean, Zach Wilson is going to be the key to making this offense unlock and live up to that potential. Right now, his ECR among quarterbacks is 20, but Breece Hall is already an RB1 on dynasty ECR at RB12. Both of these guys are wide receiver twos from Moore, wide receiver 21, Garrett Wilson, a wide receiver 22. And I mean, there's just a lot of value to be had. CJ Uzama adds a threat to the receiving game from the tight end spot. Breece Hall can catch it out of the backfield. Michael Carter as a two is much better than as a number one. And if you look at this offensive line, you know, I hate to keep gushing about the Jets, but PFF, Noah Fant, every single one ranks higher than a 65 grade, and all of them are in the top half of their position. McGovern at center ranked 9. Fant ranked 39 out of 83 tackles. Beckton wasn't eligible, but Tomlinson was the top 13 guard. And so was Vera Tucker out of 82 guards ranked. So like Pat said, the entire offensive line above average, at least according to PFF. I know it's controversial. A lot of people don't like their numbers, but a lot of people live by them. But everything looks good for this Jets offense to potentially explode. Are you buying in at all in terms of dynasty?
God, do I want to buy in? We talk about a guy that had an awesome summer, right? Like, we're talking about how great our summers were to start out. Zach Wilson had an epic summer.
He's got that dog in him. Yeah.
Oh, my God. But, yeah, it doesn't always translate, though, to the season, right? You could have as amazing summer as you want, but up until you're actually playing the sport at full speed and, you know, you're reading these plays, you're getting the coaching style down and what the coaches want to execute, yeah, got to be on the same page and everything has to translate. So as much as I want to buy into the Jets, I don't want to go and sell every asset to try to keep up with it. I mean, this is a team, first off, that's taking the Kyle Shanahan type approach where they want to build through the run, right? They want to run the ball. They want to grind out. They want to get super efficient with their passing. You know, we saw, was it Jimmy Garoppolo, and I believe it was Nick Mullins in 2019, 2020, lead the league in deep ball completion percentage. So, and that was all into the same exact system that we saw got brought over to the Jets. Zach Wilson, who I believe led the league led college in completion rate for passes of 30 yards or more in 2020, ended up struggling last year. Like he struggled with his reads. He struggled with the blitz and the offensive line, which, you know, we're talking about is significantly better, but he still needs to get better as a player and, you know, as a quarterback making these reads. So as much as I want to buy into this offense, I think the only guys that I'm willing to buy into right now are going to be some of the cheaper assets. Corey Davis, if you're on a contending team and you want to try and grab a guy, I mean, Zach Wilson showed tremendous chemistry with Corey Davis. Elijah Moore could end up being undervalued if he can give us that stretch, that small sample size that we saw last year in the middle of the season. I believe he was like wide receiver one. Wide receiver two, whatever it was. I mean, like it's there and it's really, really close. And maybe I'm going to end up missing the train on this one. You know, sometimes you do if you don't want to go all in on it. But it just seems risky trying to rely on a quarterback who just, I mean, he did not show us anything until like week 16 or week 17, week 18 last year.
I'm with you. Zach Wilson is the key. I gotta buy though. I gotta buy one of the wideouts and Breece Hall. I don't know that I have him as high as Fitz has him. I'm not putting him in the top six yet, but he definitely has the talent and he had carried the load of Iowa State. He was their entire offense. They knew it was coming. They knew they were getting Breece Hall and they still couldn't stop him. You know, just a dominant college player. So seeing if he can translate that to the NFL is exciting too. But I think, I'm already Garrett Wilson is the best wide receiver on this team. I think he is the best wide receiver on this team today. And I think Elijah Moore is very good, and I'm extremely disappointed by what we've got out of Corey Davis in his NFL career, but it is promising that, you know, look that he had with Zach Wilson last year. So hopefully he can pick it up. Go ahead.
I mean, like Corey Davis, right? Like, what are you going to get for Corey Davis? Like a fourth round pick maybe?
Yeah.
I mean,
in Dynasty, he's like, cheap.
He's pretty much free to an extent. I mean, you could wait till he gets cut possibly, but I mean, he's going to have a higher chance of hitting than a fourth round pick or a late third round pick in most cases. So why not just take the chance if you're a contender? I mean, if you're a contender, you're going to be sitting there, what, 310, 311, 312. Dude, just send it. Send it all in and go for the win.
So let me ask you this. Corey Davis or Tolbert?
Ooh, that's a good one. All right, I'm going to take Jalen Tolbert in this one just because of the early season. If reports start coming out that Michael Gallup is going to be ready sooner rather than later, I could pump the brakes on Tolbert. But this is still an offense that, even though they run the ball a ton, they still run a ton of plays. They're still in scoring opportunities a whole bunch. They're in a bad division. All it's going to take is a 30-yard, you know, pass to Tolbert down the sideline off blown coverage, and that's going to make the week. Corey Davis, we don't know if they're going to be able to move the ball. So he's going to have six receptions for, you know, 60 yards in order to be relevant, you know, or at least five receptions for 40-ish yards to get the same sort of thing that all you need is one pass from Tolbert in a scoring opportunity. Plus Tolbert, although he seems like he's like 30 years old at the point, you know, is still a younger version of Corey Davis who we haven't seen perform yet. So Tolbert, sure, but Tolbert wasn't going, I don't think, in the late third this year. He was more towards the late second, early third. So if I could have Corey Davis at a later point, I think I'd take Corey Davis, you know, at his value over Tolbert.
Let's go to the Kansas City Chiefs here. This is going to be mine. And look, I talked about it. I feel like every single show I've hit it on the head, but I feel like at some point, everyone to me is coming at a value in the Chiefs offense because it's all around Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes probably going at cost, right? Where he should go, but everybody else is cheap. Juju for Dynasty is wide receiver 39. Sky Moore is his ECR is 43. So not even a wide receiver three, either one of these guys. I know Kelsey should be the leading target receiver for the Chiefs here, but these guys are going to be productive. One of them is going to be, I think, majorly productive. It kind of is, what team are you on? Are you team Juju? Are you team Sky Moore? I'm a Juju guy. I know a lot of people are more Sky Moore, but they could both hold great value. MVS is going to wide receiver 67. Mecole Hardman, is his love dead? He's at wide receiver 80. In a standard dynasty draft, he's not getting drafted. He's on the wire. So, I mean, now that Josh Gordon is off of everyone's radar, does he come back and make some impact now that we're not testing for marijuana, right? So it didn't last year. I think that's probably the biggest stretch of all of them. But Chase, I mean, someone in Kansas City is going to have to be catching passes here, and I'm all in on Team Juju. I love Sky Moore too, especially in Dynasty. I think his value is underrated. I think it may be a little overrated in terms of redraft, but someone here is, in terms of wide receivers, is going to make a significant impact, right? Who's it going to be in your opinion?
Well, we know that Ronald Jones is not going to be catching passes, so we can go ahead and scratch him off the list. But I mean, like, oh my God, it could even be Noah Gray for all we know. We don't really know what this Chiefs offense is going to look like rolling out. I'm assuming Juju Smith-Schuster is going to be in the slot. Sky Moore is going to play one side. We're going to have MVS on the other side. Mecole Hardman would probably slot in and out with Sky Moore to an extent on certain plays that might be a little bit more advanced. But I mean, I don't know how you can sit there and not have Juju Smith-Schuster inside of your wide receiver threes. It is so absurd to me. I mean, even when he wasn't efficient, right? Even when he was getting 3 to 4 yard dump offs because Ben Roethlisberger couldn't throw any farther than 3 or 4 yards down the field. I mean, we're talking about Mahomes, who is creative as hell, who Juju Smith-Schuster is still a good wide receiver, regardless of what type of offense he's in. I mean, it just blows my mind. Like, I am so frustrated, like just shaking people being like, what are you doing pushing him back this far? You know what? Let them do it. I will take it everywhere I possibly can. And then when it comes to trying to acquire him, if I'm a contender, dude, late second round pick, if I'm a contender, send it to me all day. I saw a trade the other day. It was Michael Carter for Juju Smith-Schuster. I'll take that all freaking day. Like, that's gold for me. I'd much rather have a wide receiver who has a chance to finish wide receiver one than Michael Carter, who doesn't even see targets when Zach Wilson is playing quarterback. So, I mean, even if Breece Hall were to get hurt, Michael Carter is probably going to still be a mid running back too. I mean, Juju Smith-Schuster, if he sees 150 targets, could easily be a wide receiver one in this dynamic offense. Give me that all day long.
Well, Chase and I are about to go do karate in the garage because we just became best friends.
Let's go.
So I'm pumped about this. I'm obviously the Juju stan. For redraft, I have him at 19. I believe I'm one of the highest rankers in ECR and him in both Dynasty and on redraft here fit. So I think the point is, because you and I have hit this ad nauseum, right? Everyone knows our thoughts on this, but you got to get a piece of this offense. Even if you don't believe in Juju, go get Sky Moore because this is the cheapest he will probably be, right? Same thing for Juju. This is the cheapest he's going to be. If someone breaks out here, they're going to be wildly expensive next season. So even if you don't like this situation, if you can pay cheap for Juju or Sky Moore this year, then they're going to hold a crazy value next year. You can peddle them off. And you know, this is the old game you used to do in middle school, right? Where you start off with like a paperclip and see what you can barter up to. And you can go get yourself a washing machine, right, Fitz? I mean, you just have to have a piece of it, I feel like, right?
I think so. And it will be interesting to see if the buzz builds for Sky Moore in training camp after, you know, he was on the shelf with a hamstring injury and OTAs. Juju, like, we've heard the Juju slander in some quarters. I know that, you know, a few months ago I was on a live stream with Chase and a friend of the show, Shane Manila, and Jacob Sanderson. And Jacob just outright slander of Juju. And, you know, a lot of guys on that show rush into Juju's defense. So, like, I know some people have used the contract thing as maybe evidence that, you know, Juju is not that highly thought of. Like, if he was going to be, you know, if he still had great potential, why was he not more highly sought after in free agency? Why did he have to settle for a pretty modest contract? But, I mean, the Chiefs chased him 2 years. The Chiefs wanted him in 2021, and they circled back and wanted him again. And supposedly, Andy Reid thinks really highly of him. I have no doubt he's going to be prominently involved in this offense. Like, I just don't see any way that he, you know, disappoints. I just, like, don't see that happening at all. So, yeah, I'm really interested in the values in this group.
From your lips to God ears, Fitz, I'm ready for it. Go ahead, Chase.
So I just sent a tweet in our private chat back here, but I mean, Nick Jacobs, who covers the Chiefs, he's been at the Chiefs practice for the past 2 days. He's sitting there saying, man, the film does not do this justice. Sky Moore is ready to explode in this offense pretty much. So, I mean, yeah. Pat brought up the hype. The hype is already starting, baby. We expect the hype, right? We expect the hype. But
let's build the buzz on this podcast, man.
Starting.
That's right. It should be. I mean, like I said, even if you don't like Juju, then get Sky Moore, like, because they're going to be more expensive next year. Like, just imagine if both of them click and this offense is just easy. You know, I mean, that's, it's just a scary thought to have. So before we go to the next subject here, I got to tell you guys about Reality Sports Online. And by now, most of you have probably heard of Reality Sports Online, the powerful fantasy platform where owners get to build and manage their fantasy team like an NFL general manager. But the question is, have you tried it? It's time to see what all the buzz in the Dynasty community is about. Free agency, multi-year contracts, a rookie draft, multi-team trades, franchise tags, contract extensions, first-round rookie options, automated contract and salary cap functionality, and much, much more. I think it sounds complicated. It's not. The best thing about Reality Sports Online Fantasy Front Office is that it doesn't take any more time than a standard league. It just requires more strategy. Think you're among the fantasy elite? Well, this is the platform to test your mettle. Still not sure? You can test your general manager skills for free, FREE, in a mock free agency auction today. If you like what you see, use promo code FANTASYPROS to receive a 10% discount on your team or league today. Fantasy just got real at realitysportsonline.com. All right, Chase, what is the number two most sought after storyline from the preseason and training camp for you?
All right, so this one is tough because I think it's going to get, you know, ugly before it actually starts to clean itself up. Carson Wentz over there for Washington is joining the team, and it's been, what, 20 years outside of Kirk Cousins since they had a consistent winning quarterback, and then they let him walk. You know, Washington's been trying to piece together this quarterback room, and it just has not been working. This whole thing just kind of stinks of Dan Snyder versus the front office. I mean, it just, something's not right. Like, the whole front office doesn't do stuff like this. They don't freak out and go trade for a quarterback too early. I think pressure is being put on. They're like, let's go grab Wentz. Snyder has nightmares of Wentz beating him in the past and, you know, throwing, what was it, like a 6-touchdown game or 5-touchdown game back a few years ago. So this feels like more of a Dan Snyder type move. And so Dan Snyder's going to try and force the hand. Now, Carson Wentz, sure, like what, mid quarterback two range most likely in terms of fantasy assets. So it's not even about him. It's about which assets he's going to use. And up until last year, I don't believe he actually had a wide receiver lead the team in receiving or receptions. I believe it was tight ends and running backs going back to his days with Philadelphia. I think Michael Pittman was the leader this past year, but that was his first year to have a wide receiver over there. I just want to know what angle he's going to take because, you know, we have Logan Thomas, right, who's been injured this entire time. No other reports have come out about any of these tight ends kind of separating themselves. Then they brought in Jahan Dotson, who, you know, he's a deep receiver, but he feels like a reach, you know, not the biggest, most physical guy, but maybe he does have some Deshaun Jackson-esque type skills. I mean, it just seems super kind of sketchy as to which one you invest in outside of Terry McLaurin. I mean, they're all going late, so that's a good thing, right? All their values are pretty low overall. Jahan Dotson's, what, mid-second round or so in rookie drafts. Meanwhile, nobody else really has any kind of draft capital or trade capital in terms of value. So I think you can take some shots on these guys, but which ones do you want to take shots on? How are they going to use Curtis Samuel moving forward? Are they going to use Jahan Dotson in the slots? Like, even if you do see a way to them actually seeing value, their usage, I think, is going to be key as to like when you can actually play them. Because if Jahan Dotson ends up playing on the outside, that means De'Ami Brown is gone most likely or won't have any relevance. But then Jahan Dotson's value all of a sudden is week to week in terms of consistency. It's not going to be an easy team to play, even if you end up getting one of these guys cheap. So I kind of want to see how they're used in the offseason, because I feel much more comfortable with Jahan Dotson in the slot, De'Ami Brown on the outside, you know, having one of these tight ends kind of step up. And then the biggest part is what's going to happen with Antonio Gibson. Is he going to step up and be able to catch passes as well? Or are they going to end up using Jaden McKissick after stealing him back from the Bills?
There's a lot of interesting stuff going on here. Just to put some points on here, Carson Wentz, ECR 29 in quarterbacks. He's below Baker Mayfield, Daniel Jones, Winston, Pickett, Tannehill, like some questionable guys in there for sure. And then when you look at the wide receivers right now, Terry McLaurin, ECR is 17. So a high end wide receiver too. But Jahan Dotson, 46 below. I mean, there's some good names here. He's below Sky Moore, Claypool, Lockett, Renfro, Allen Robinson, Michael Thomas. A lot of guys you've seen do it before. But I mean, this is why I like taking wide receivers late, particularly in Dynasty, because there are so many good ones that could blossom versus running backs where your pool is somewhat limited. But it's also kind of the same thing for me in terms of Washington too, Chase. I'm a Brian Robinson guy through and through. Every single Alabama running back since the Nick Saban era, our guy, our boss man, Matt Friedman, has tweeted this out multiple times. Every single Washington running back drafted in the top 100 drafted in the top 100 since Nick Saban took over at Alabama has had a 1,000-yard season. And Brian Robinson was in the 90s, not in the 100s. So we're ready to see him step up and take a big role. You could put Antonio Gibson in the slot if you wanted, because he played more wide receiver at Memphis than he did running back. Dotson is here. De'Ami Brown, I thought, was pretty good at North Carolina. He's done nothing, but this would be the Kmart version of the New York Jets, right, Fitz? I mean, this is like, everyone's a little bit less, maybe. I mean, McLaurin would be the best wide receiver out of the entire group, but everything else is a little bit worse for Washington, particular at Carson Wentz. So it's kind of, do you believe in Carson Wentz feeding this machine that could be a decent offense in Washington if he plays well?
Yeah, Chase has, you know, confronted with me with the uncomfortable reality that Carson Wentz has not really created a lot of value for his wide receivers in recent years. This is tough on me because I'm a Jahan Dotson advocate. love the guy's game. You know, think he's a playmaker. And
Fitz watches a lot of Big Ten football.
I do watch a lot of Big Ten football. So, yeah, I like Jahan Dotson. But, you know, realistically, the chances of him making a big splash with Carson Wentz as his quarterback in year one are probably not all that great. And, you know, we'll see how Terry McLaurin does with him. I know some people are hoping that McLaurin finally puts it all together. He's teased at like a great wide receiver one season, but we haven't quite gotten it yet. And, you know, same with some of the pass catchers. I mean, I've objected to the non-usage of Antonio Gibson in the passing game, as this guy who's a former college receiver and is, you know, built like Jonathan Taylor and runs like Jonathan Taylor. Wentz is not really dumped off to his backs that much in historically. So, man, yeah, this is kind of putting a pin on any enthusiasm I might have had for the Washington guys.
Well, I tell you what, in terms of Dynasty, what you can do potentially, and maybe this is a point you're getting to, Chase, buy these assets low now. And when they have Will Levis or Bryce Young or whoever, CJ Stroud, as their quarterback next year, then you can go pick them up. And, once again, you buy them low and sell them high. You know, I think that it's a potential. Is that a strategy you would do, Chase, or you maybe avoiding them just because you don't know how long this Carson Wentz thing is going to last because Snyder?
That's just, yeah, I mean, that's one point, is like, how long is Carson Wentz going to last if he does stay healthy? You know, how long is Washington going to stay mediocre? Because that's what they're really, really good at, is staying mediocre for the most part. Right when they need a quarterback, they're mediocre like the next year. It's like, all they need is a quarterback to do it. And then they go in and get a guy like Ryan Fitzpatrick or Alex Smith. There's somebody that's, you know, either slightly above average or mediocre, and that doesn't really help improve the team because the egos of the coaching staff in the front office think that they can make it work. More so what I'm leaning to do is I want to buy on a rebuilding team primarily or competing team. I want to buy Antonio Gibson. Antonio Gibson, when he was able to play in the pass catching role, I believe he had like 4 out of his 6 matchups were running back ones. And then one of the 2 that weren't running back ones was still a running back 2. He had 1 bad game in that entire spree. So he does have wider or running back 1 potential. Excuse me. However, what I kind of want to do with rebuilding teams here is I want to try and acquire Dommy Brown super cheap. I mean, he might even be on your waivers at this point, but, you know, maybe some fab 5th round pick, something on those lines. But I want to also draft Sam Howell or pick him up off waiver wires. Sam Howell and Dommy Brown had that connection, as you brought up, back in their college days, and they played really, really well together. This is something as to where Taylor Heinicke can't stay healthy, right? We have Carson Wentz, who can't stay healthy. And you have Sam Howell as a rookie who likes to run. So if this offense can somewhat tailor it to what they had with the Cam Newton style offense, where they do call a lot or much more rushing plays for the quarterback position, and they utilize Sam Howell and his mobility. Plus Sam Howell can end up using that to pull safeties in, leaving Dommy Brown one-on-one deep. We already know that he has faith that Dommy Brown will be there. I mean, we could see this duo kind of connect and take it to the next level. Now, I know that's a long shot, but we're talking about rebuilding teams that don't have a ton of assets. So I took over an orphan team recently that didn't have any picks for the next like 3 years, and the whole roster was trash. I did it for a friend of mine. And that was one of the strategies that I went with, was I ended up grabbing John Dotson. I took Dommy Brown. I traded for Antonio Gibson while I could. And then I picked up Sam Howell off waivers because nobody else wanted him. And I mean, this offense is ugly, but if Sam Howell works, great. If not, then we are looking at, you know, the Bryce Young show. So, I mean, either way, it's kind of a win-win to an extent. It didn't really cost you much.
You're the Washington Rebuilds is what that team
That's
is.
That's exactly what that is. You're taking shots, right? You're taking shots.
Yeah, you got to take shots, man. That's the way you do rebuild fast if you can. A little more difficult in football than it is in other sports to rebuild because people don't want to part with their stars once they become stars. But it's a falling knife. You hold on for them too long, and then they're giving you absolutely nothing. Fitz, what is your second storyline from the preseason and training camp that you want to go over here?
I'll tell you in just a second, Boggs, but I have to comment on you bringing up the quarterback who puts mayonnaise in his coffee, Will Levis. Yeah. You guys see that?
Yeah.
He puts mayonnaise in his coffee, and not a small amount of mayonnaise either.
It was a decent amount. Yeah, it was more than a spoonful. Sure.
Did he mix it up? Was it supposed to be butter? And then he actually
put
mayonnaise?
Up. No. It's weird stuff that he does to be weird. I feel like so.
Yeah. Can you trust that guy? I don't know. I guess if people kind of get on Patrick Mahomes' case because he puts ketchup on steak, but to me, mayonnaise and coffee is.
They're both egregious. I think mayonnaise and coffee is grosser than ketchup on steak. But you eat a steak and you ruin it with. I don't like ketchup on a burger. I feel like it ruins a burger. So I'm just not a ketchup guy, but putting it on a steak is, I'm also a Texan, so that is complete blasphemy to me. So
yeah. I'll bring it full circle and say that mayonnaise on a burger is underrated. So
it's not bad. I'll say that. I'm not a big mayo guy, but not bad. Better than ketchup on a burger. That's what I would say. So, but I prefer the Whataburger style, mustard on it. So that's what I prefer. But Fitzy, what else are we talking about in terms of dynasty storylines here?
All right, if I'm going to talk about the Jets, I can't leave the other New York team out. The Dable effect. Like, I want to see what Brian Dable can do to this offense that, you know, so sputtered last year under the guidance of Jason Garrett and Freddie Kitchens. So many questions here. Like, can Daniel Jones' value be saved for Dynasty? Is Saquon still special? Because, like, his Dynasty value is kind of teetering on the brink right now. Is Kadarius Toney, in fact, a star in waiting, or is he going to be one of these guys who's just constantly hurt a la Percy Harvin, and we never really see what he can do? How good can Wandale Robinson be? Boggs, we talked about the precedent of wide receivers 5'9 or shorter. Like, the hit rate is very small for these smaller guys. So, but Wandale is a buzzy dude. Does Kenny Golladay still have any value? Can Daniel Bellinger have any year one impact? And is he a dynasty tight end worth acquiring? So much here. Can Daboll turn around this offense? We obviously like what he did in Buffalo, but man, this is an interesting renovation project he's undertaken.
Look, I feel like if given enough time, I can talk myself in or out of any player in the NFL. I feel like I can paint the scenario in my head as to why they're going to be successful or why it's not going to work. But this is truly one of the toughest ones because you can squint and see it either way. You can squint and say, hey, look, Daniel Jones has got to go. You know, he started out this year terrible. You have a great back in Barkley. You have an improved O-line. You have receiving options that are good, finally, outside of maybe a tight end, like you said, which could mean Bellinger holds value in this offense, underused at San Diego State because they're a run-first team. But the dude can catch passes, although starting out on the pup in training camp is not the best way to, you know, jumpstart your career or anything. But Golladay, we've seen, had success. He just looked lazy last year, to be honest with you. I don't know that all of it's gone, but his fire to play last year was gone. He took plays off. He looked lazy. I don't know any other way to describe it. And I've seen that dude run through a wall in Wyoming at elevation against Josh Allen in the Wyoming Northern Illinois game. Like, I've seen him do it. So I think he was just drummed down by that bad coaching staff last season that's willing to, you know, run it up the gut on 3rd and 13 or whatever from their own goal line. That was just pathetic. Tony had those huge breakout games. One against Dallas in particular was enormous. He's going off a wide receiver 49, a wide receiver 5 in Dynasty right now, which is crazy. Saquon is still at RB10, but there's questions about him. You're absolutely right. I'll say this. I probably, if I had to put a hard line on it, I don't buy into Daniel Jones. I do buy into Saquon. I do buy into Tony. I probably don't. I'm probably done with Golladay. I think Wandale has potential. Wide receiver 73 is probably a little too low for him. I would rather take a shot on him. Bellinger, I'm probably just not going to have too much interest in unless it's a deep, deep tight end premium league where you're taking flyers. But what do you think about this Giant situation, Chase? Because there is a lot of questions, and I feel like everyone you ask has a different answer as to whether they think this is going to be able to work with Daniel Jones or not.
So I'm going to start with Bellinger just because you finish off with that and it's fresh. Mm-hmm. I mean, Bellinger's super interesting, right? Because we see tight ends every single year that get pumped up because of their touchdowns, right? They get pumped up because of, you know, the touchdown percentage. And although some people are, you know, love that aspect, some people can't stand it. The people that love it, right? If Bellinger catches 4 touchdowns, 5 touchdowns, 6 touchdowns as a rookie, like, how high is he going to be up on some of these people's rankings next year? Where are people going to value this guy? He could have 400 yards receiving and 6 touchdowns, and he could probably be fringe tight end 1 in terms of dynasty value. So Bellinger, like, at his value now, sure. Like, do I think he's going to perform at a high end level where I'm going to start him from week to week? Probably not. Am I going to start him a single week in 2022? Probably not. But am I going to look to move him if he ends up having a big season? And can I end up getting a significant return on him in 2023? Like, oh my God, like, he should have you like chomping at the bit to try to acquire him as cheap as you can get him right now, which, I mean, is practically nothing. In terms of this offense, what Daboll started to do with Josh Allen in order to maximize his efficiency was he started bringing down the average depth of target from year to year. In, what is it, 2018, he was sitting at 11.5 average depth of target, 9.7, 9.3, 9.1 in last year's.
Gave him easier throws.
He spread out these short, short stature type receivers who were able to get open. And then he had one bigger receiver, somebody like a Gabriel Davis, to get downfield. Of course, Stephon Diggs still got downfield and whatnot. But when we talk about like spreading out the field, allowing Josh Allen to use his legs to be able to generate 6 yards, 7 yards on first and second down. So it set him up with easy third down conversions. I think that we could see that again with Daniel Jones, as long as he doesn't get tripped up by the turf, of course, you know, or end up fumbling the ball. So the
turf monster will get you.
Yeah. Like, we've seen Daniel Jones just attempt these third and longs time after time. And sure, like, they ended up having to run it up the gut on third and 13 up against their goal line. But I mean, it feels like every single third down was a third and long. So how many plays did they have in that playbook to be able to call a passing play on third and long? It was just putting Daniel Jones in bad situation after bad situation. We've seen Dable's results with Josh Allen and how he was able to groom him and get him into a better situation as time went on. And now they have the perfect receivers in order to do that. Kadarius Toney is a beast at getting open in the short to intermediate range. Wandell Robinson can get open in most cases in short to intermediate range. We obviously have to see that at the professional level. Sterling Shepard's another guy who has a tendency of getting open when he plays in the slot. You know, they use him a lot on the outside, but anytime he's played the slot, he was a different animal. I mean, last year he was a monster playing in the slot. And then you have Kenny Golladay, which I'd much rather see Colin Johnson on the outside than Kenny Golladay to stretch that field. So, I mean, are we going to see Colin Johnson?
I like Colin Johnson. He's my guy.
I hope that we see Colin Johnson, but you know, he could be on his way out of the NFL here shortly. Either way, when it comes to this offense, I'm actually investing in Daniel Jones pretty heavily because of those reasons, but even more so because Saquon Barkley. Brian Daboll, ever since he started coaching, I believe it was in the early 2010s, maybe late single digits over there, he was actually very efficient with the running backs. He only had one really, really good running back, which was Jamal Charles, maybe Priest Holmes. The other guys that he had were guys we've never heard of, essentially. I mean, and he was still able to turn these running backs into valuable options. I mean, even with Devin Singletary and Zach Moss, you know, two nobodies, it wasn't anything amazing, but it was still better than we would have seen in most other offenses. Sure, we can credit that to Josh Allen, of course, but I think that Saquon Barkley is now finally going to be in an offense where they maximize his utilization, especially in the receiving game. So if they can end up increasing his efficiency in the receiving game, sure, he might not see, you know, 100 targets or something like that, but give me 60 targets, 45 receptions, and that's going to have monster consequences for your fantasy opponents in 2022.
Yeah, see, I feel like, once again, I could talk myself into circles on it, specifically Daniel Jones, whether he's going to be good or not, because I thought he was way better than Haskins coming out. Everyone freaked out when he went ahead of Haskins, and then neither one of them played well. So, you know, I can see it. You can squint and see the potential for Danny Dimes because he runs a lot, and it's efficient for what Brian Daboll does. So my second one here that I want to bring up is the Atlanta running back situation. I just want to know, what is Patterson? Is he a running back? I know just reading The Athletic, Josh Kendall on his roster projections, listed him as an RB. And I know there are many platforms that took him out of wide receiver completely and made him an RB, but they went out and they got Tyler Algier. They signed Damian Williams as well. And Calvin Ridley got suspended. So now your number one wide receiver is a rookie in Drake London. Who's number two there? Zacchaeus? I mean, seems like it should be Cordarrelle Patterson playing more wide receiver than running back because they have guys that can play running back. We've got a lot of love for Tyler Algier, who's currently RB 54. Patterson is RB 45, so not even an RB 3 if he is playing running back. I know he's old, but he hasn't taken running back hits like other guys have because he's been spent all of his career as a wide receiver before last year. And Damian Williams, who, like, if you squint and look, and if Patterson is going to play more wide receiver, which I don't know. I don't think he is. I think most people consider him an RB. But if they did go back to that, who would you give this starting job to, Damian Williams or the rookie? Damian Williams would have to get that job, at least to start, I think. At least more, he would be on the field on passing downs for sure as a pass blocker versus Tyler Algier, who's playing linebacker at BYU 2 years ago and doesn't have a ton of experience. He played both in high school, but more linebacker in college than running back the last two seasons. So this whole team is a mess to me, Fitz. Do you have a lean you're going? Is it a void because it's gross and Mariota is the quarterback and nothing looks right in Atlanta right now? Or are you taking a flyer on Algier or Patterson or anybody here?
Bugs, can we just put your Texas guy Bijan Robinson on this team right now? Ooh, and wow. You know, like, just clear out the whole room and have these guys compete for a backup job. Like, I mean, I think Patterson's time is kind of running out, and you know, like, maybe they milk a little more value out of him, but his efficiency was just plummeting toward the end of the season at running back, like 2.4 yards a carry over his last four games, I think. So, and like, if he's just a pure receiver, I don't really see any fantasy value there. He's not going to be like a 1,000-yard guy. He's going to be like maybe a 500-yard guy. So I'm not really enthusiastic about him. You know, Algier, an okay prospect. You know, I just...
Yeah.
Maybe he falls into some opportunity there this year, but I don't think he's really a guy you're falling over yourself to trade for. And, you know, Damian Williams is really old, too. So maybe he's maybe there's a little bit of 1 year value there, but that's about it. So I'm pretty much turning up my nose at this whole situation.
Chase, is there anything to like here? Is there a single thing that you like about this scenario in Atlanta?
Oh, man, I absolutely love it. I love Tyler Algier for this year. I am not a fan of, like, competent plotters, right? Like, that's not who I normally gravitate towards, these slow guys who can grind it out, like Benny Snell-type players. But Tyler Algier is a little bit of a different animal. I understand that he might not have played in the best conferences and whatnot, and had the best competition, but he's still first in the NCAA with 23 rushing touchdowns in 2021. First in the NCAA in yards after contact for 2020 and 2021, fourth in the NCAA and missed tackles forced in 2020 through 2021. I mean, this guy is just the perfect candidate. If he had a little bit more burst, he'd be the perfect candidate for the wide zone run scheme, which is what they're trying to run in Atlanta. But with a mobile quarterback now, they don't have to worry about that burst. They don't have to worry about that defensive end. It's going to freeze linebackers and freeze the defensive end that's coming around from the weak side. Typically, the wide zone run scheme is primarily focused on, hey, chop block the guy on the back end, but just in case there's a linebacker that blitz off the weak side or the defensive end doesn't get chopped, that running back needs to get out of the backfield as quickly as possible so he can find that hole and he can get upfield. That's all that matters. Once you end up hitting that line, if somebody's still there and there's a little hole, you better hit that hole with ferocity and you better end up gaining 2 to 3 yards if you do get taken down. Well, Tyler Algier is not going to get taken down in this situation. He is absolutely a monster in terms of being able to create yards after contact. Is he going to end up having a bunch of breakaway runs? No. But could we see him have over 4.5 yards per carry? You know, in terms of efficiency levels and being able to get that chunk yardage, absolutely. Tyler Algier is going to be a monster in this offense. And whether it's Marcus Mariota or Desmond Ridder here, I think that he's going to succeed. In terms of Damian Williams, we're talking about a guy who hasn't had over 500 yards rushing in a season. He's been in the NFL for, 8 years or so. He's a pass catching back, so I could see him in third down situations. But, I mean, if Tyler Algier ends up catching fire, if he ends up getting hot, I don't know who's going to stop him.
Yeah, I mean, it's just an ugly scenario. It's with Marcus Mariota too. So you see, like, what you want, Atlanta has one of the worst defenses in the NFL. So what you want this team to do is run the ball, control the clock. So honestly, it's probably going to be a disgusting mix of all three of these guys, and no one is going to come out happy about it. But I do think if there is one guy with the most upside, it is Algier. So I guess I would say that in terms of this, but I think overall, probably just not something I'm really messing with. Let's talk about our last ones. We're kind of running short on time here, so we'll just lay out the ones that we want to talk about third, and then I'll go to each of you. So we'll start with you, Chase. What is the last one you want to talk about here?
I mean, this is kind of similar to Arizona, where we just don't know what to expect. But the Dolphins, right? Are they going to be a dynamic offense? How is Mike McDaniel going to deploy the offense? Who's going to be in what situations? Are we going to see Jalen Waddle play the Brandon Ayuk role while Tyreek Hill plays the Deebo Samuel role? Are they going to split things? And what is going to happen with Cedric Wilson? Because Cedric Wilson was kind of forgot about, right? He's probably so far down on the list when it comes to ADP, like, what, 70s, 80s, and ranking in ADP. It's probably absolutely atrocious. But the thing is the Kyle Shanahan offenses, the offense that Mike McDaniels is likely to bring over, it thrives off of having a guy who's 6 foot, 6 foot two, 200 to 210 pounds, who can play possession on the slant routes over the middle, get you 9 yards to 10 yards per reception, just like clockwork, because then they can
they
run
brought
these
in
gadget
Sanu
plays.
Today too.
They
which
did?
Is, yeah.
Oh,
which
that's
is
even grosser.
Right,
yeah. Dude, he's out. He's out. He's there for training camp. I don't even care. He's out. No, but I mean, like, they need that guy. They need that physical type receiver. I mean, and although Cedric Wilson's not a physical type guy, when you think of him, you think slot receiver. But he still is 6'2", 200 pounds, maybe what, 205 by now. I think 200 pounds is his rookie weight. So you could see this guy. You could see Cedric Wilson absolutely finishing as a top 36 wide receiver. Even if Waddle and Tyreek Hill get theirs, the question is how often do they run the ball in this offense? Because they got a bunch of injury-prone running backs who haven't been able to stay healthy since they came into the league. So how much can they expect to run it and still be or still stay efficient with the running back room?
So, Pat, your quick thoughts on Miami, and then what is your last one you want to bring up?
Yeah, Chase mentioned it. First of all, I'm glad he touted Cedric Wilson, who I was just talking up on the Fantasy Pros flagship pod as like great late round values. You know, he's like the handcuff wide receiver almost. Like if anything happened to Hill or you know, Jalen Waddle, look out. And that is exactly it. Like it's a Mike McDaniel. If he's bringing over the San Francisco scheme, it's like, you know, the wide receivers are the sexy guys in this offense, but they're going to run the ball if it's, you know, he's truly making this a 49er style offense. And like, that's a lot murkier of a situation.
What's the last team you want to talk about here, or the last subject?
Oh, the Denver pass catchers. I mean, since everyone's been waging war on Twitter all offseason about who's the guy to own, Jerry Jeudy or Cortland Sutton. And, you know, I think we're going to start to get answers here in training camp in the preseason. Also, I mean, we know Tim Patrick's a useful guy. Does KJ Hamler have any value? And what to make of Albert O now that he has finally been decoupled from Drew Lock after several pro and college seasons?
It's so interesting, too, because like we said, Garrett Wilson, Elijah Moore, literally next to each other in ECR. So are Jeudy and Sutton. Sutton's 23, Judy's 24. So both just inside the wide receiver, too. Albert O is getting a lot of love, tight end 14 right now. But also we heard that him and Dulcic are competing in camp to see who the guy is. Remember, new coaching staff. They drafted Dulcich. They didn't draft Albert O. So that's their guy. You know, and KJ Hamler was a nice downfield threat at Penn State. Obviously, he's had some injury stuff, and Tim Patrick won't go away. You know, he is in there, you know, messing everything up for these guys the last couple of years. So, Chase, do you have a strong opinion of the Miami situation here?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to lean one way or the other in terms of, you know, which route you want to go with these guys. Honestly, I think it's almost a coin toss to an extent, but I can understand investing at the right cost, but aside from that, I'm not really throwing too much more at it.
I like that. So many people, like, you know, so many analysts have expressed like certainty about how the Sutton Jeudy thing is going to work out. I'm with Chase, man. I'm kind of like agnostic. Like I feel like my instincts are pushing me toward Jeudy, but like, I don't know. I could be.
Sutton totally has done it before. That's the thing to me, Fitzy, is Sutton has done it before. We've seen him have NFL success. We haven't seen with Jerry Jeudy, but Jeudy hasn't gotten a fair shake. He hasn't gotten, he's been with Drew Lock. Drew Lock sucks. I'm sorry. Like, you know, I wanted him to be good. He's got a rocket of an arm. Maybe they'll make him better in Seattle. He was no good in Denver.
And so, Jeudy missed half the season last year, high ankle right off the bat. And then, you know, he wasn't right until what?
In
December?
Terms of prospects, there's barely been any that I've seen that were more ready to jump to the NFL than Jerry Jeudy.
Right.
So it's surprising that he hasn't had the success. So I guess I would lean more towards Sutton, but I'm with you guys. I see a path to success for both of them. So I just don't like, my answer is Javonte Williams. I think Javonte is going to have a huge season. I don't like Melvin Gordon at all. They let him be a free agent for 2 months before they signed him 2 days before the draft. I think it's Javonte here.
Boggs taking shots at my Wisconsin guy. All right, go ahead, man.
Chase, what did you say? I'm sorry.
Javonte Williams over here, his college jersey right over my shoulder. I think he's going to have a massive season.
Yeah, that's right. I thought you were raising your fist at me. I was like, what are we doing?
Oh, no, I was trying to do an awkward point, but it's really difficult to do on, like, when you have reverse screens on the camera.
Yeah, still, reverse screen. Yeah.
3 or 4 years, and I still have not gotten used to that yet.
Same,
I still point the wrong side every time.
I always do this when it's supposed to be that every single time. Yep. Every time. My last thing I want to talk about is, like, we got some last chances for QBs here. That this is, I mean, I say that, and QB, anyone drafted in the first round always gets an extended look. Obviously, we see Mariota and Trubisky in situations this year where they could be the starters. Carson Wentz is still getting a shot. So I say this, that this is their last shot. Someone will pick them up. Baker Mayfield is in Carolina now. But I think we have some last shots. I think this is it for Tua. He's currently QB 17. If he doesn't get it done, they're going to be looking for somebody else. I think Zach Wilson, who we talked about a little bit earlier, same deal. QB 20. He's got all the weapons. He has no excuses. And this is an impatient fan base. And not only in New York, but also living through Sam Darnold and Zach Wilson. They're going to say they're cursed or something if Zach doesn't work this year. Tannehill has been moving downhill steadily, and they drafted his eventual replacement, it looks like, in Malik Willis. And they're not that different. In less than a full round difference, 8 spots, QB 23 for Tannehill, 31 for Willis. Mayfield versus Darnold, 29 versus 37 in ECR. And Jameis Winston, I mean, I don't know how many more shots he can get. So we've seen him lead the league in passing. We've also seen him throw 30 picks. So I just think a lot of these guys are on their last legs here. If I had to choose one to succeed, I think it would be Tua, just because all the weapons are around him, and I still hold out a little belief in Tua. I know people don't like the arm strength, but that would be my guess. Chase, do you have any favorites out of this group? Do you not like any of them? What do you think of kind of last chance for these QBs?
So it's kind of funny. Like, you know, we're talking about Carson Wentz, right, earlier in the show, and how Washington was trying to surround him with these weapons. You know, they have Curtis Samuel. They have Terry McLaurin. They drafted John Dotson. You know, the team that actually did that right was the Saints. You know, they go out, they get Jarvis Landry, they get Olave, Michael Thomas. You know, we don't really know what's going to happen with him. I think he's practicing right now, so I believe he will be playing. Yeah, he should be fine. You know, Jameis Winston is set up to crush this year. But when we talk about in a division opponent that we don't really know what's going to happen, the Carolina Panthers with Baker Mayfield, with Sam Darnold, that one is messy. Like, we have Sam Darnold, who we think knows the playbook, question mark. You know,
he tried to bring in Cam Newton to replace him last year. How can he be trusted at all? You know,
and then Baker Mayfield, like, this offense is pretty much predicated off of passing downfield outside the numbers. We know that Baker Mayfield does have arm strength. He's one of the better arms in the NFL, but outside the numbers, he's just not accurate. And so when we talk about delivering accurate balls outside the numbers, it couldn't end up being just a giant mess over there for Carolina. You know, it's interesting to see what could happen with Matt Corral because of the schedule itself. I mean, it's brutal, brutal over the first, like, 11 to 14 or so weeks of the season's brutal. And then I believe they end up having a bye and then a super easy schedule after that. So if Matt Corral can actually put together, you know, a decent set of games, if he does get the opportunity later on the season, you know, both those guys could definitely be gone, but Corral could be an absolute steal right now because everybody's off. I saw him dropped in almost every single one of my dynasty leagues, even two quarterback leagues after the Baker Mayfield trade. So
the only reason I wouldn't be into him this year would be because of, this is it for Matt Rhule. Like, Matt Rhule's getting fired. So I don't think he'll put a young quarterback just to see what he has, because he won't be there next year. But who knows? You know, if they start out 0-4 and they've given both these guys two starts, it might just be, well, screw it, let's see what the kid has and throw him in there, you know? So you just never know in terms of some of these situations. Fitz, those QB situations, do you agree that it's kind of last chance, at least in those spots, for all these guys? Or do you think someone could have a bad year and stick there?
Oh, I definitely think a lot of these guys are looking at their last chance, Boggs, because look, and you got to consider this in assessing the long-term dynasty value of these guys, because look at the class that's coming in 2023. A lot of these starting quarterbacks this year are going to be involuntarily clipboarded next year.
Yes.
With, you know, Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, Will Mayonnaise and his coffee Levis, you know, Anthony Richardson, Tyler Van Dyke, maybe Spencer Rattler. Like, there are so many QB prospects in next year's class that I mean, there is going to be a wave of competition, and you know, the weak may not survive. The herd is going to be thinned out next year for sure.
It absolutely is. So it's going to be fun to watch. And look, like Chase said at the beginning of this, we could go for another 2 to 3 hours. We could look at every team and go through their big storylines if we could, but we had to narrow it down because we just have about an hour here. But Chase at @FF_intervention on the Twitter machine, thank you so much for stepping up and joining us here. What do you have coming up? And just let everyone know where they can find all your awesome work.
Oh man, I can't release what's happening right now. I have something in the works right now with my good buddy Jacob Sanderson. I can't talk about it yet. We have to wait until the later first week of August or the second week.
Get the approval of
the
government.
Yeah,
to unleash this. Unleash this. I'm excited about it. That's awesome.
Yeah, we'll be having we'll be having some stuff going on, so I can't release that yet. But if you follow me on Twitter, the announcement will most likely be on there. Plus, we have tons of stuff coming out with Trophy Smack. I mean, the draft boards are live right now. We just got draft boards in, so they're being shipped out. Massive trophies, of course, champ chains. We just had the SFBLA, which is Scott Fishbowl LA live draft, which was insane. I mean, we had the list of names were absolutely nuts of the people that we had there. Over 50 people in the industry drafting all together. It was crazy. And then, you know, the stuff with Fantasy Intervention and our live shows over there, we're still doing on Wednesday nights with, of course, Shane, Jacob, and myself. You know, we got to have both y'all come back and you know, do a little guest spot for us again.
Absolutely. That'll be a great time. @Fitz_FF on the Twitter machine for Fitzy. What do you got coming up, my man?
Well, I'm going to be busy trying to crack the code and figure out what Chase and Jacob have going on, because two guys that sharp, like, I want to know what they're up to. No, so I'm excited to find out about that. But yeah, we're just doing a lot of season planning right now for Fantasy Pros. And we're going to have some amazing content throughout August. I mean, I think it's probably, as far as number of articles go, it's probably our busiest month of the entire year. Help people prepare for their drafts. And then we're going to have a lot of great in-season stuff, too. So be sure to check it out at Fantasy Pros.
Absolutely. And look, you can find me here every single week. Obviously, I do my stages on Discord every single Monday night at 8 p.m. Eastern. Probably have to change that once the season starts. I think I'll be doing those with Joe in season. So we'll see, usually Wednesday evenings to do that. I'll be doing the college football betting show with Thor Nystrom for Betting Pros coming up during the season as well. And of course, all my stuff over at In This League, 2 hours of live streaming a day, Monday through Thursday, plus our ITL fantasy football, fantasy baseball shows, ITL college football, the individual defensive podcast with Gary Davenport, CFP Winning Edge with Nick and Xavier. So if you want to hear me, I'm around. Just check out @BogmanSports so you can see all of the stuff that I'm involved in. But that is going to wrap it up for us. We hope you guys enjoyed this, and we will see you guys next week. Take it easy, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Pros Dynasty Football Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram @FantasyPros and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/FantasyPros.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.